It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Everybody.
Hi, Dr. Nick.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Bengals Show presented by the Riverfront. Kind of a new name, kind of tweaked name. We're just rebranding a little bit here, but how's everybody doing this? I guess it'll be Thursday morning when everyone gets on. I am your host, Joe Farsing. Alongside me, per usual, is my good friend and hopefully yours, the coach, Greg Niemann. Greg, what's happening, bud?
Doing good, man. How you doing?
I am fantastic. Besides the fact that the Bengals are 0-2, and my Bearcats kind of crapped the bed and lost the victory bell for the first time since 2005. I'm still doing well. The Reds are still playing meaningful games. They're playing as we speak right now on Wednesday afternoon, but we're doing well. We have our health, so.
Yeah, we're staying positive. Staying positive.
We are nothing but positive. No, not really. If anyone who's listened to us more than once, pretty cynical and pessimistic in general. Before we get going here, again, everyone who isn't subscribed, subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/riverfrontcincy. We are giving away tickets to the October 15th matchup versus the Seahawks to a lucky subscriber. So again, get in. We'll be picking that really soon. So if you're not in now, you're going to miss out on a chance. Again, follow us on Facebook for those 85-year-olds that are on Facebook. Thumbs up button, all that fun stuff. Join the family, patreon.com/riverfrontcincy. A lot of fun stuff for our patrons. We have our Slack channel with channels for literally everything. Reds, Bengals, Bearcats, Musketeers, soccer, music, movies. And on last Sunday night, we had a had our live post-game show, and we actually took our patrons live on air, and that's something that I'll probably be doing in the future as well. So you guys can get in and ask questions or give comments or anything like that. It's just a really fun time, and recommend everyone getting in there if they have a chance. So
how nervous were you to open it up to live questions?
And there was that trepidation. Luckily, yeah. As our good friend, Sidney Price was the only one who was either awake, paying attention, or bold enough to come on. So she got to hang out with us for a while. She always has a lot of good things. She was on Late Night Reds with Tim a few weeks ago. So, you never know. And, I mean, we're live, but, again, we don't have a second drop button, but we're pretty loose with the language here anyway. So, no nudity. Don't have anybody, walking in the background with junk hanging out. That'll get us all in trouble. And
other than that, we'll be all right.
Exactly. Excuse me, I forgot to hit the mute button for that cough here. I'm still dying. It's been 3 weeks of this cold, flu, pneumonia, plague, COVID. I don't know what I have. I don't even feel bad. I just can't get rid of this stupid cough. It's really driving me nuts. That's why I've got the super sexy voice the last few episodes. It's, So, and again, last thing before we get going. Again, SeatGeek. Use code Riverfront for $20 off your first SeatGeek order. The easiest to use ticketing platform. You pull up your the event you want to look, and they have all prices rated by color. You see a green price, green dot. That means you're getting a good deal. You get a red dot, that's a bad deal, and move on to the next guy. So, again, use code Riverfront, one word, for $20 off your first SeatGeek order. On to the news. You ready?
I'm ready.
Woohoo! No word yet for Joe Burrow status for Monday night's game. Practice, because this is a Monday night week, practice begins Thursday instead of Wednesday, so no press conferences from Joe, no press conferences from Zach, no practice or anything like that yet. So Taylor said after the game that Joe was going to go back in if they had another drive, even after he tweaked everything. He walked off the field and looked, he looked a little ginger, but he was walking around okay. There was reporting coming out this morning that he feels a lot better after a couple of days. I anticipate him playing. What do you think?
I'm hopeful. If I had to put money somewhere, I would bet on him playing, but I'm just hopeful right now. I just hope he can every day. I hope he feels a little bit better. So yeah, hopeful is the word I would use.
Exactly. We do have live reaction to Bengals fans' thought process going up to the Monday night game. No, wait, that was Jesse Spano having a speed addiction on Saved by the Bell. Did you ever watch Saved by the Bell?
Oh, absolutely. That's
okay.
As soon as I saw that clip, as soon as I saw it, the first thing I thought of was Zach Morris with the cell phone that was a brick that the kids nowadays would say, "What is that?" I just remember that brick cell phone he used to have.
Absolute brick. I used to work for another lifetime ago, I used to work in cell phone sales, and people would come trade those phones in. Like in 2007, people would realize that a 20-year-old phone that looks like you're holding a beige brick up to your head probably isn't the most effective and portable thing. So,
not the most efficient.
No. But yeah, fan mood is it's kind of iffy. Everyone, the positive people are trying to point out that, hey, Bengals were 2-0 last or 0-2 last year. They've been in this hole and they've come out of it before. The negative people are like, oh my God, the season's over. Burrow's going to be put on the IR. Going to have to wait 4 weeks, then ramp back up. Jake Browning's going to be the second coming of Akili Smith or Ryan Finley, and they're going to be 0-6 or something like that. So it's kind of run the whole gamut. How do you look at this 0-2 start compared to last year, compared to, you know, every other team in the league right now?
I look at this 0-2 start like I'm a Bengals fan, and this is the greatest 0-2 start ever. I mean, who cares? We had the 90s where you lose, you know, 15 games a year. 0-2, it's just hard for me to be devastated by being 0-2 when I've watched, you know, the worst football for decades. This is an 0-2 that matters. It's an 0-2 that ESPN's going to talk about. It's an 0-2 that can still win the Super Bowl. It's an 0-2 that everything is still in front of you. No goals are gone. So I'm staying positive with it just because I've seen so much worse, you know, at times here in Cincinnati. So I really, my panic meter is not high. The only thing I'm concerned about is Joe Burrow's health. If we get and have Joe Burrow's health, you know, everybody keeps talking about Ja'Marr Chase and all these things. If Joe Burrow's healthy, everything will come around. So no need to panic. Just everybody calm down. And let's just continue to get better every week. And if we do that, then you know, the ball's in our court, and we'll be able to do whatever we want to do.
Yeah, the optimistic point of view is right now in the AFC, there are two teams that are 2-0, the Ravens and the Dolphins. There are five teams that are 0-2, Patriots, Bengals, Texans, Broncos, Chargers, and everyone else is 1-1. So it's not like there are 7-8 teams that are already 2-0, and now, you know, they're two games behind in any kind of playoff stretch. Being 0-2 in the division isn't ideal. Last year they were 0-3, and this isn't the same. You know, last year it was Burrow getting his strength back up in the offensive line meshing. This is now Burrow having to manage and deal with an injury. I mean, game one was him getting his timing back and trying to trying to get comfortable with the new pieces and trying to get, you know, just to get his timing down. This past week was partially that, but more also just limitations from the from dealing with the injury. And Taylor even said that they actually scaled down some of the offense because of the things that he can't do. I mean, he's not able to do a lot of boots and things like that. We'll see. It's, you know, I'm still cautiously optimistic. They have avoided, knock on wood here, major injuries, which can't be said for the other teams in the division. Again, I mean, the Steelers have Cam Hayward out for a huge chunk of time. Nick Chubb had one of the most disgusting knee injuries. It looked like he put his knee on back, his leg on backwards. You never want to see it bend the other way. He's not a horse. Jack Conklin went out week one for them, and the Ravens have a bunch of guys that went out in week one. Dobbins going out with a season-ending Achilles injury. So, I mean, they're in decent shape right now. You know TJ Watt's going to end up missing a couple games because he always does for the Steelers. Their offense looks like flaming hot garbage. It's amazing. Being 5-for-5 with 5 touchdown passes in 3 preseason games really doesn't mean a whole shitload, does it, if you're Kenny Pickett?
Yeah.
He looks awful, which, you know, for those that thought he was going to be good based off the preseason, I understand the players get better year over year, and I expect him to play as a whole better than he did last year because, I mean, he finished the season looking like a reasonable quarterback. I don't think he's as bad as he is, but he's not in that top tier quarterbacks. Like, he's not even the second tier quarterbacks.
If you look at his last, I think it was 6 or 7 games last year, he was a upper middle quarterback. That middle tier, upper middle tier, the last 6 games, if you look at those exclusively.
Sure.
But this, his start definitely has not warranted that kind of placement in the quarterback hierarchy. So, Steelers got some things to worry about. Ravens look really good. Lamar looked good. But them being 2-0, I think most people would have said the AFC North will have a wild card, if not 2. So, and based on how the Bengals' playoff runs have gone, to me, the most important thing is our health when we get there. Because I think you can directly point at where we got hurt and then how it added to us getting eliminated. So at this point, 0-2 with health, I mean, there's worse places to be.
Exactly. Again, just kind of going over second thoughts on the game. I mean, we were pretty cynical. I had Tim Daniel on with me Sunday after the game. And I feel less negative about how the game went. Burrow looked like he was getting on track. He made some throws, even in the first half of the game. He had like a hole shot to Irv Smith that Smith couldn't keep his feet in bounds. He's been probably my biggest disappointment right now for what that's worth. Just couldn't keep his feet in bounds, but the throw was perfect, right? You know, right between the hole in the zone between the linebackers and the safeties. Second half, again, the interception that he threw, I feel less, it looked like one where he's completely just didn't see the safety at all. The safety actually made a good play. He disguised coverage and made it look like he was going to take Chase to the corner. He broke off as soon as Burrow started his motion and, you know, just beat the ball to the spot. The throw was right on the money. The throw was perfect right in, would have hit Higgins at the goal line right in stride. So
I think you could, the one thing I saw in that game, there was two takeaways for me. One was that Lamar Jackson looked as good as I've ever seen Lamar Jackson look from his time in the NFL. And I am a self-proclaimed Lamar Jackson hater. I hate Lamar Jackson's game. It has nothing to do with me being a Bengals fan. I just despise the way he plays football at the quarterback position. It just doesn't fit my mentality. But I thought he played the best game I've seen him play since he's been in the NFL. Delivered the ball from the pocket and then, you know, punished the Bengals when they didn't keep him bottled up or anytime they tried to. So I thought Lamar played tremendously well. I got to give credit when it's due. And then Joe Burrow, for the first time, I think you could really see the calf directly affect the plays. So it wasn't from him throwing the football. I mean, obviously he was on point. His decision making was good. But what I saw was that the Ravens took their defensive ends and said, we're gonna go straight upfield. We're gonna get Joe Burrow off the spot, or we're gonna go to his back foot and we're gonna make him move. And when there were clear lanes for Joe Burrow to step up and through and then kind of extend the play out and then deliver the ball. But he couldn't even do that. I mean, he was ready to he would step up, and then it was, I have to get rid of it. I'm not going to be taken off sideways out of the pocket and then deliver the ball, which, you know, he does from time to time to extend that play a little bit. So, you know, I think for what Joe Burrow's working with, I thought he played tremendously well. When you can't move as a quarterback, you know, that makes it tough because that extra second, second and a half, 2 seconds, that's massive. And he just couldn't create that with where his calf was at. And I thought that that directly cost the Bengals, you know, 14 to 21 points. I definitely thought there were plays out there. If he just could have stepped up and moved around a little bit more, I think there would have been a lot of things out there.
Yeah. As a whole, the offensive line played really well, I think. Gave up one sack. It's credited to Jonah Williams, but that it wasn't Jonah Williams' fault. He ran the defensive end 9 yards into the backfield. The interior just got pushed back absolutely in Burrow's lap, and he had nowhere to step up. But yeah, one sack, one hit, 4 hurries. I mean, that's – you do that for, you know, against the Ravens defense. Now, they don't have the best edge rushers. Right. But, I mean, that's a very solid, well-coached, talented defense.
Yeah.
Todd Monken absolutely pulled Lou Anarumo's pants down and spanked him. I think that the Ravens finally have somebody, an offensive coordinator that can design an offense that utilizes Lamar Jackson to his best, you know, or to make him his best self. Yeah, he looked absolutely dynamite. I mean, the throws that he made, he had some open looks. There are plenty of open looks, so that's, you know, that's one thing. But the throw that he made downfield right after the interception, throw he made downfield to Zay Flowers, and he put that right on his helmet in double coverage, an absolute laser. I mean, there's 4 or 5 other guys in the league that can make that throw. That's a throw Joe Burrow can't make. He doesn't have that arm strength to be able to put that ball right there where it was. So it's, you know, kudos to Lamar. He looked like MVP Lamar. Anarumo is absolutely going to be studying this, dissecting that, and working out something for the return game against the Ravens, but I think they absolutely just de-pantsed him.
Yeah, to me, for Anarumo, what it said to me watching the game was that Anarumo's level of trust with his secondary is just not there yet. I just felt like he was much less aggressive than I thought he would be. I just don't know that he trusts those guys on the back end yet to make big time plays in one-on-one matchups. And you talk about the Zay Flowers ball, that it was a terrific ball, and it was. But to me, that was a 50-50 ball that the Bengals have a couple guys there, and you got to find a way to make that play. I mean, I thought that play to me was a big one. One of the game changing plays, and the Bengals were right there. They easily could have won that play. And instead, it was a big L on that play. So I just don't, for me, Anarumo just didn't, I don't know that he has that same trust that he had the past couple of years with Bell and Bates.
Yeah, Nick Scott didn't play well. He went out twice with injuries. I'm curious what his availability will be. And then if you're down to Jordan Battle, does that limit, not that Battle isn't a capable player, but he's a rookie. I mean, it's Nick Scott, for all his good faults, bad faults, he's been in the league, and he has more of an understanding of just the speed of the game, you know, the actual, you know, how the game flows. So you hope that doesn't further limit, you know, the confidence that Lou has, and we'll see. I expect them to play better. As poorly as the defense looked, as many things that went wrong on offense, you know, turnovers, and Brad Robbins still can't punt the ball more than 40 yards. If they got to stop there on the final drive, they've got a chance to get with the ball to tie or win the game. Yeah. They lost by 3 points in the game they played terribly in. By and large, they had 62 yards of offense in the first half.
Yeah, and you're talking about, I mean, again, Burrow's calf. I mean, if he's full strength, I just think there is some positives to be taken away from this. Losing by 3 to what we just have described as a Ravens team that's now one of the 2-0 teams. the best looking version of Lamar Jackson we've seen, the worst version of Ja'Marr Chase we've seen in his time in the NFL, a secondary that still getting its feet wet a little bit, and you lost by three. I mean, there are positives to be taken.
Yeah, and that's with having no sacks, because Hendrickson had two sacks and they were both negated by penalties. And there really wasn't many negative plays that the Bengals were able to force. Penalties were the only thing that knocked the Ravens off schedule.
Yeah, hell, we didn't even mention the Carter penalty for the iffy hands to the face that negated a turnover, which I'm not the guy to ever blame the officials. I think, you know, bad calls are going to happen. Good calls are going to, you know, you got to play through it. But I do think that one was a 50-50 call. Unfortunately, it didn't go the Bengals' way, but it very easily could have. And if you flip that penalty and say it never happened, I think it's a different game.
Oh, absolutely. I understand why they threw the flag. Mm-hmm. His hands were right up in his face. It was inadvertent, and he removed them quickly, but then he put them back, I have no problem with the play being called. I don't think that it should have been called, but I completely get it.
Yeah.
There's the other penalty that was egregiously bad, was the illegal contact negating the other sack by Cam Taylor-Britt in the end zone against Odell Beckham Jr. I don't think that really even had. Yeah, it took a sack off the board, but the Ravens were in field goal position and they had the best kicker who's ever graced this planet. So I really didn't have an effect. It was the end of the half anyway. So
yeah,
ready to give out some awards?
Let's do it.
Let's give out some awards here. First one is the stud of the game.
I'm not going to lie, that fires me up. I'm ready to go. I'm going to kick down this door back here. I'm ready to go.
Thank you, Joe Esposito, for the Karate Kid soundtrack. Charlie Jones, Chuck Sizzle, we criticized him a lot in preseason because he didn't show the ability to make anybody miss, wasn't getting any separation in the passing game. One and only time he touched the ball on Sunday, 81-yard punt return touchdown, absolutely flying, 21.0 miles an hour. He was the fastest ball carrier on the entire day. Decisive cut and then just absolutely just ran right past everybody. That first punt return touchdown they've had since 2011 or 2012. It was Pac-Man was the last one, but it's been a minute since the last one. So hopefully this is something that, not that we're going to expect the punt return touchdown every week, but he's got, you know, If this starts convincing the other team to punt it shorter, punt it up in the air, punt it out of bounds, that's a win for the Bengals if they start kicking afraid of him.
Absolutely. So, absolutely.
With the good – go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say, with the good comes the bad, and for the dud of the game
– that boy is good.
Mm-hmm. Good and terrible.
Greg, you want to – you want to handle that one?
Dud of the game, for sure, for me, was just Bengals emotions as a fan. It was just, you felt like it was kind of like a gut punch. I think we all really expected the Bengals to bounce back and win this game. So the dud of the game to me was just kind of, as a Bengals fan, having to rally your spirits back into realizing that 0-2 does not equal a death sentence. And we've been here, done that. So for me, it was just like, just the raw emotion of after that loss, I was just like, hell, I shaved off the beard of knowledge after that. So, I mean, there you go. That's all you need to know.
Even off the beard of knowledge, that's
self-proclaimed beard of knowledge.
Don't have any kids though. They'll let you know how knowledgeable you
really are. Oh, for sure.
So anyway, time to turn the page. Moving forward to game three. Monday night, Monday Night Football, 8:15 versus the Rams. It's whiteout. It's the Ring of Honor. Will Joe be suiting up? Can Lou right the ship? There's a lot on the line. The crowd is going to be absolutely just electric going into the game. We need to see if the Bengals can keep the crowd in it. They heard boos last week. First half is, you know, they three and out. You know, there were some boos coming off the field. People were unhappy with the play calling. And we can go into the reasons why, but outside of throwing the ball short of the sticks and to the perimeter on pretty much every passing down, I mean, it's, you know, Bengals are in jeopardy of losing pretty much all the momentum that they had going into the season if they're not able to win this one. Playing the Rams are 1-1. They are a lot better, I think, than people expected them to be. Offense has been really good. Matthew Stafford looks maybe not vintage Matthew Stafford, but he, you know, it looks like he's back to where he was in 2021. He's healthy and he's got the offensive line is playing better than expected. I still think that the Bengals offensive line is going to be better. I wholly expect that Joe Osai is going to suit up this week. Again, just more juice in the pass rush. I think it's going to be a game where they're able to, you know, to move his feet because again, he's an old quarterback. So, bring up the offensive keys to the game here. The first one I have is starting fast. They need to get the chains moving early. If it's running the ball more, they've been effective running the ball. More scripted, if it's utilizing different guys, you know, I don't know. They need to start fast. How do you think they go about that?
For me, the key to them starting fast, and I know this is going to sound maybe stupid if you just look at it from the statement itself, the Bengals need the lead. We need a lead. If the Bengals can get a lead and now your defense can play with a little confidence, that for me, that is the most important thing of the week. Get the lead, let the crowd be a factor, and let Joe Burrow, your quarterback, play with a lead and your defense play with a lead. And I just think everything fits together so much better. I don't care how they do it. I don't care if it's a Chuck Sizzle punt return. I don't care if it's a pick six. I don't care if it's a 72-yard field goal. Whatever it takes, just give me the lead early. And then I think you can kind of get the snowball effect from there.
72-yard field goal is pretty bold. I mean, that would be...
Hey, if anybody's going to do it, Money Mac.
Exactly. Second key, and these are my, you know, commit to running the ball. They've run the ball pretty well this year. Mixon has looked pretty sharp. I mean, he's running with a full head of steam. He's got an offensive line that's given him holes. They've only run the ball. I mean, Mixon has 26 carries in two games, 13 carries each. And I think they need to feed him more. And especially if Burrow, I mean, he's even if he's at the same level of limitations he was last week and, you know, not any worse, you're limited on the passing game. So you're taking away a huge chunk of what you want to do, but you're not augmenting it with everything. So I really think they need to commit to running the ball more. I don't any thoughts on that? I know you're a big proponent of like this isn't who they are, but
no, I would commit to running the ball for sure because Joe Mixon has looked good, and if this is at times in football, you have to rely on what's not your best attributes. That's the beauty of football; you have to be able to do it all. And if Joe Burrow's hobbled, yeah, I mean, hello, we need to rely on the run game. The only part I would add to that is that they need to utilize the pass game as part of their running game. We need to get some quick screens and some things out on the edge. Also, just getting the ball in Jamar Chase's hands will help him get started. It's like a shooter, you know, giving a good three-point shooter an open layup, and then all of a sudden, boom. So I think they need to find some ways to get Jamar Chase with the ball in his hands without having to throw the ball vertically or down the field or to the outside, maybe a jet sweep or put Jamar Chase in the backfield, or they need to do something to get him the ball. So use the passing game as an extension of your run game, a guaranteed positive play that helps you win first down and makes second and third down much easier, to where the Rams can't just line up and say, we're going to make Joe Burrow get off the spot.
Yeah, I mean, remember, with the Rams comes Aaron Donald. And yeah, Aaron Donald's older, but he's still an absolute force in the middle of the line. So you keep him off balance. And again, you give the defensive line 1 second of hesitation, like 1 moment of hesitation, and that buys you time later in the game for, you know, to find the guy over the middle of the field, you know, just to back off the pass rush. So I really think that, again, who knows what, you know, that you thought they would have done this 2 weeks ago in the gross rain. You thought they would have done this last week just to kind of negate, you know, to kind of battle the slow starts they've had the last two games. But I think it's a must that they will absolutely have to run the ball early instead of waiting two or three drives before they start giving Mixon the ball.
Yeah, agreed.
Point three, utilize the middle of the field. Week one and large part of last week, everything was to the perimeter. So many swing passes, a handful of screen passes. There was nothing over the middle of the field until we got into the third quarter and in the fourth quarter. And they started having success. They found T over the middle, Tyler Boyd a few times. It's Rams linebackers are pretty weak in coverage, so you want to stress them. I would love to see this be the week that Irv Smith gets going. Use him down the seam. I mean, they talk about how he's for a tight end. I mean, he's almost like just a large wide receiver with the way that he runs and everything. So get him down the seam. I think a lot of quick slants, RPOs and maybe some mesh routes, you know, just muddy up the middle of the field because they're becoming predictable.
Yeah.
There's a huge gap over the middle because they're not covering it, because they're not throwing it. So I really think they need to use that in the passing game.
Yeah. And with that, utilizing the middle of the field, obviously everything, you know, is a chain reaction. As you begin to utilize the middle of the field, Jamar Chase's job gets a little easier out there, out wide. So it all works together. And that would definitely be a massive help to the Bengals to get Irv Smith going down the middle.
Yeah, absolutely. Key number four is be creative. If the Rams can get Puka Nacua, I don't even know how to say his name. If they can scheme him open to throw him 33 balls in 2 weeks, he's got 25 catches. Why are the Bengals, who have a better quarterback, better supporting cast, why are they struggling to get Chase the ball?
Yeah, I mean, if I knew the answer, if the Bengals knew the answer, I think they'd fix it. I just think it'll come. But I do agree. I think the Bengals need to do a better job. Also, you know, it's the first 2 weeks of the season, and every year is completely different. Even as an offensive coordinator, if you think you know what you have, you really don't. You get into the season, and I think, you know, we're figuring some things out as we go. Every team is different. So maybe where the Rams thought we got to get this guy the ball just like he's Cooper Kupp. Filling that Cooper Kupp role. The Bengals, I don't think we're necessarily worried about Jamar Chase. You know, we got to make sure we get Jamar the ball coming into the season. They kind of thought it would just happen organically. And now all of a sudden after 2 weeks, now it's we have to get him the ball. We've got to find a way. So that's fine. I'm sure they will address that by being creative in multiple different ways, like we just talked about with jet sweeps and some quick screens to the outside. When things get bad and you're 0-2, that's when you get real extra creative and you find a way. You got to find a way to win.
Yeah, whether it's just moving them all over the formation, lining them up in the backfield, jet motion, orbit motion, just so he gets a free release, or so that he's, you know, getting matched up on a safety or a linebacker. It's frustrating. Again, obviously the Bengals know the strengths of their players more than anybody, but 2 weeks in and they're playing right into the defensive schemes. It's really vanilla, and it's got nothing to do with Burrow being hobbled. There's no reason you can't run exotic formations more than anything, you run something that's, you know, out that doesn't, you know, a different formation, even if it's that silly ring around the rosy crap the Chiefs did last year. Just something to throw a changeup to the defense to give them just that small moment of hesitation. Again, a quarter of a second of them guessing, you know, whether it's, you know, all kinds of pre-snap movement. I mean, the Bengals use a lot of movement pre-snap, but they don't use a lot of movement at the time of snap, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, they'll motion guys all over the formation, but they're lined up by the time the ball snaps, so defense has a chance to, you know, to adjust and make sure, you know, make sure coverage is adjusted. I don't know. Do you think they should run more RPOs?
Yes, I do. The sad part is right now, if you watch the Bengals offense and the play calling, the thing that comes to mind is if you're strictly looking at the play calls, you think kind of lazy. I mean, like, there just isn't that flair to dominate, or the flair to look, you know, look sexy out there, which I'm not always the look sexy kind of guy, but right now our offense looks super vanilla. And you look around the league at places like LA with the Rams, where they can get Puka Nacua or however you pronounce it. He can get 30 something targets. I mean, sets a record for a guy in his first two games. And I promise you, there's not one person that knew who that guy was coming into the season. Not one. And then you look down in Miami, and Tyreek Hill is motioning all over the field to get himself three releases and get wide open, and we can't do that at all. We can't find a way to do some of these things. So for me, I mean, the scary part is it looks lazy on the play caller's part. And I hate to say that, but that's just what it looks like. RPOs would definitely help, especially with our run game kind of opening up a little bit. So I think all things are on the table, all hands on deck, and they have to find a way to get it done.
Say what you want about whether you like sexy looks and stuff like that. When I think sexy looks, I think great. So
yeah, you ain't wrong there.
But yeah, I mean, Puka Nacua, he's a fifth round draft pick out of BYU. That's not exactly like Ohio State wide receiver university or, you know, Miami Hurricanes back in the day. It's just frustrating because, again, they've set their identity so much, and they're, I don't want to say inflexible, because they've shown the ability to change thing up, to change the script, but you don't want them to wait too long. Last year, in the middle of the Ravens game, was at week 5, I believe, they totally threw away the run game script and ran, you know, quit running, lining up under center to run because that was dead giveaway. It's either run or play action. And started running more on a shotgun. So they can do it, but it's, why don't we get more varied and more, like, exciting or spectacular, you know, change stuff up before it's needed.
Yeah.
It just gives them something else to look forward to. It's one thing I don't understand. We talked before we went on air. I've never been a fan of the head coach being a play caller, whether it's offense and defense. I think you need somebody who's separate, that, you know, the, I don't know. I would love to see him turn the reins over to Brian Callahan, because, I mean, that's been the big complaint about Zach Taylor since he was hired as a head coach, is he's not a great play caller. So something needs to happen. They need to find a way to keep the other team off balance, to change stuff up. Because, again, you don't have Joe Burrow from week 12 last year. You have Joe Burrow who's, you know, 80%, 90% with the calf injury. So,
yeah. And I completely agree with the head coach thing. I coached with, I won't mention any names, but there was I was with a head coach who was also the offensive coordinator. And it was the worst situation. I mean, it was terrible. It was absolutely atrocious. It didn't work. But I get back to that lazy thing. I think it creates that you kind of can just rest on what you have because you're the head coach and the offensive coordinator, instead of diving into, I have to come up with the absolute best game plan for this week offensively, and nothing else matters. When you're the offensive coordinator, the punt return game does not matter. the secondary play does not matter.
Yeah.
You are not worried about how many points you think they're going to score. It does not matter. You are solely focused on one job. And when you're the head coach, I just don't think it's possible. My experience with it is atrocious. It was the worst coach I've ever dealt with. And I'm starting to see the laziness tendency. And I'm not saying that he's being lazy, but it looks lazy because it's just not all there. It's clear. If you go ask Zach Taylor, watch these past 2 weeks. Were these the two best possible game plans you could have had for those 2 weeks with the pieces you had? And I think he would tell you no. And I think that's all you need to know. If he was being honest, he would say, no, I probably could have done a little bit more. So that's why I say it looks lazy. I just don't know that he feels the all-in singular focus of being the offensive coordinator, which I think is super important.
Yeah, I mean, the offensive coordinator is the one, is the primary one coming up with the game plan, so let him make the calls.
And as a head coach, you're still involved. It's not like, it's not like on 3rd and 7, if you want to call, you know, whatever, you can, Bill, we're calling this play. Okay, yep. Done. It's not that you're completely removed from being a play caller, but let them come up with the game plan. Let them call their game, and you can put your input in as needed instead of all the time.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I expect a better offensive, more fluid offensive performance. I don't think it's going to be that drastic of just a terrible first half offense. The Rams defense isn't great. Again, they still have Aaron Donald and they still have, you know, still have some pass rushers, but it's not the Rams defense of 2 years ago. They don't have Jalen Ramsey. They don't have Von Miller. So Bengals offense will get going. And I just want a first half. I want to see first downs in the first half. I want to see one time consuming drive. It doesn't even have to be 7, 8, 9 minute drive, take up the whole thing. It doesn't even have to result in points. It's flip the field.
Yeah.
You get the ball. You know, I mean, they kick it off. You take the ball at the 25 yard line, drive to the other 45. Hell, go for fourth down and miss. I don't just move the ball, get some confidence. That's why I think running the ball is they're moving the chains, like they're converting. And to get confidence, to get the team's confidence, what's the best way to get the offensive line engaged in the game? Run the ball. I mean, modern NFL, yeah, it's more efficient, it's more effective to throw the ball. I mean, it's your win percentage goes up. It's, you know, you get more yards per pass than you're going to get per run, but get the offensive line out and just mauling some dudes in space and, you know, get them in a lather. I think that's, you know, get the ball moving downfield early. You can't put yourself in a big hole.
Yeah, this isn't Madden. This isn't Madden where, oh, well, throw the ball, you know, you pick up more yards that way. There is something to be said for when you line up across the ball from somebody and they know you're about to punch them in the mouth 15 times in a row.
Yeah.
You know, how do you respond to that? You know, a lot of people respond differently when you cock back and jack them right in the face. You know, things get real right then. You really find out a lot about people. So I definitely think that the run game would be a nice addition.
Yeah, and it's not like the Bengals are averse to going with a run-heavy game plan. I mean, you look at the Panthers game from last year, and I don't know if that was the plan going into the game to run the ball as much as they did, but it worked. I mean, Mixon ran 22 times, 150 yards. P. Ryan had 50 yards on the ground. Burrow was efficient, 22 of 28 for only 200 yards and a touchdown. I mean, that's the game plan they should be looking at, just to get the offense confident and moving. And if it works, awesome. Then second half of the game, you can use more play action. You can use RPOs just to suck, you know, to get them looking for this. It's something that I think that they will do, and I hope they do, but we'll find out Monday at 8:15. Onwards to the defensive keys here. First one seems obvious here. I'll let you, you're the defensive coach. I'll let you hit these first.
Yeah, if we can rush the passer and get Matt Stafford off of his spot. When Matt Stafford's comfortable and he knows what's coming around him, and of course he's seen a lot, if Matt Stafford's comfortable, that creates problems for the for the Bengals, especially with this young secondary. I'm always nervous when you have a young secondary that if a team starts to get rolling, all of a sudden that young group starts to question themselves and they don't know if they can do it because they still, you know, are not experienced. They still have to prove themselves. So I think the best way to make that happen, to make the Bengals secondary, you know, feel good about themselves is let's rush the passer and let's make the secondary's job a little bit easier by getting Matt Stafford off the spot because he's not a super mobile quarterback.
Yeah, especially at this stage of his career. Yeah. Totally aside here, do you think Matt Stafford is a Hall of Famer?
I think he will be. But I, this is a much deeper discussion because I the Hall of Fame thing with quarterbacks is becoming insanity. Because if you look at all these guys' numbers, I mean, are we really going to put, you know, Philip Rivers is a hands down Hall of Fame. Like there's just so many guys that are like that, that have just tallied up so many stats. Hell, I mean, Kirk Cousins, he keeps playing. It's just, there's way too many guys with way too many numbers. For me, Matt Stafford is a borderline Hall of Famer in my book, but I think he'll definitely get in.
I think the next 10 years of Hall of Fame voting is going to be fascinating because
within
the next few years, you're going to have Drew Brees is going to get in. Tom Brady is going to be in 5 years. These are guys that have like the best of the best numbers. But when this group of guys, Matt Ryan, Stafford, Philip Rivers, guys that have huge numbers that absolutely blow guys from the previous generation out of the water. I mean, it's not Peyton Manning or, you know, stuff like that. Eli Manning, when he's eligible, I mean, Eli Manning's not a Hall of Fame quarterback, regardless of the two rings that his defense carried him to, but he'll get in.
Yeah.
Absolutely get in. But it's going to be interesting because the quarterbacks that have got in previously, it was more wins and championships. Because again, how many times have we had the Ken Anderson argument? He doesn't have a ring, which is why he's not in. It took Dan Fouts. I mean, I question whether Dan Fouts belongs in, but I mean, it took him forever to get into the Hall of Fame because he never won a title. Troy Aikman is in only because he has three rings. His numbers absolutely are squashed by anybody contemporary or modern day or even guys before him. I mean,
yeah.
But
Terry Bradshaw.
Yeah. I mean, he's a guy whose numbers are, he had some fantastic seasons, but when you look at the whole body of work, if you take away the team success, because again, quarterback can only do so much, there's one player out of 53. You take away the team success and you stack his numbers, you know, it's the blind comparison against others. You know, they don't exactly match up well. So it's, and I guess that's where Hall of Fame versus Hall of Numbers comes in. It's, we'll see. It'll be interesting in the next few years. We kind of got off track a little bit here. I just kind of wanted to ask your opinion of Stafford. Because you look at his career, and again, without just looking at numbers, but like Pro Bowls, you look at where he finished an All-Pro and stuff like that. He's had a fantastic career. He just wasted a huge chunk of it playing for a crap-ass organization in Detroit.
Yeah, I think his time in Detroit actually adds to his legacy because they were actually, for Detroit standards, they would be phenomenal. You know, winning eight games in Detroit, you know, that's a huge win for them. So I do think he'll end up getting in.
Yeah, and it's one of those, like, I think he'll probably, like, the ring wanted, yeah, it's a team, you know, winning a Super Bowl ring is a team honor, you know, a team accomplishment, but he played really, really well the entire season and through the playoffs. So it's performing in the playoffs, I think, gives him that edge. So we'll see. Anyway, back to rushing the passer. Yeah, he's older. He's not mobile. He's pretty statuesque back there. Do you think they're going to fabricate, you know, try to come up with more exotic ways to bring more pressure with stunts, twists, bring in extra guys? Or are they just going to try to rely on the front four to win matchups that they couldn't win against two backups last week?
I think they'll kind of let it play out and see, because this is totally different than the last 2 weeks. You are not rushing Lamar Jackson or Deshaun Watson. So where it's much harder to get home against Lamar Jackson. Matt Stafford, if you do the same things you did last week, you would have had 6 or 7 sacks, where Lamar Jackson was able to get away from some things. So I think they'll kind of let it play out organically and see what they need to do. But I would start by trusting the front four to get pressure on Matt Stafford and getting home. And then if that's not working to the extent that you want it to, then you can start to get more exotic. But I do think there's a very good chance with the Bengals front that they can have some success with just the down four.
They need to do something about the interior of the defensive line. I was big on Zach Carter hype train. I think he has ability. He's shown none of it this year. And it's, you know, he had the nice the interception that Deshaun Watson threw in week one was because he got his hand on the ball and threw it right into Dax Hill's lap. But he needs to win more battles. The best offense or the best interior interior lineman that they've had creating pressure is DJ Reader. And while, yeah, it's something he can do because he's so strong, that's not his game. You need to have BJ Hill. You need to have the other guys create pressure on the inside, whether that's moving guys inside. Like I know Murphy ran a couple, played a couple snaps inside last week. They quit using Hubbard on the interior, which I would like to see him bring back, but they need to find a way to get more guys than just the edge. Cause you can run those guys. Yeah. All you have to do is run those guys, you know, around the edge, and he's going to be able to step up because nobody's in his face.
Yeah.
So,
and sometimes the best thing for, you know, a position group that's playing poorly is go play across from the greatest to ever do it. And sometimes that just kind of brings out the next level within your guys. So I think Aaron Donald being on the other side of the field, while you can clearly see why that would be a downside for the Bengals, I think it actually could help a little bit, because those interior linemen, I promise you, they'll be watching Aaron Donald. They will be watching his every move, and that motivation hopefully can kind of speed up their game a little bit.
Agreed. And just spending a week, you know, running a scout team defense against them, and, you know, running against the offensive line and everything, they're going to be watching a lot of film. And, you know, I used to be watching film with Aaron Donald anyway, and I'm sure all these guys do, but mm-hmm. especially when you're playing them, you get a little more focused on them.
So. Yeah.
Moving on to the next point. You want to?
Oh, my bad. My bad.
Sorry.
Yeah. Doubling Nacua. I think I essentially am just going to treat him. And clearly I think the Rams have done this as well. I'm going to treat Nacua exactly like Cooper Kupp, because I think you have to. The guy's got, 25 catches in 2 games.
Yeah.
And of course I've left him on my fantasy bench for both of those weeks. So that was delightful as well. I want this on record. I'm going to leave him on the bench this week as well. Well, wait a minute. Maybe I should play him. He'll get no points. So I got us Bengals country. I'm going to play him and he'll score none. But I think you have to treat him exactly like Cooper Kupp, because clearly the Rams are doing that. They're putting him in that role and saying, all right, go get it. And he's done a hell of a job so far. So yes, I think you have to make the Rams play left-handed. When Cooper Kupp or Nacua, when they're rolling, that's when the Rams are comfortable. When Cooper Kupp is not rolling or Nacua is not rolling, that's when you start making them play left-handed. You know, bad things can happen for the Rams. So I think you have to do anything and everything to make them uncomfortable and Nacua uncomfortable.
Are you denigrating left-handed people?
Maybe, I guess. I don't know. What's denigrating mean? No, just kidding.
Not cool, man.
I know. Terrible.
I am the left-handed people are the best people in the world.
It makes a lot of sense that you're left-handed.
It really does. It really does. I fit the typical quirky, odd left-handed, you know, all the tropes you hear about left-handed people. It's very, I fit pretty much each and every one of them. I think along with double Inacua, I think they're going to play a lot of too high looks to keep Tutu Atwell in front of them.
Yeah.
third-year receiver out of Louisville. He's got a lot of yards, nowhere near the catches that the Nagu, shoot, nobody can have that many catches, but
right.
He's been able to get behind defenses. He's got a lot of speed. Again, I don't know how, I don't know how to double receiver A and, keep receiver B from going off the top. I mean, that's kind of what the team has been doing to the Bengals. But, I mean, they need to keep him, and especially with young safeties, whether Nick Scott's there or it's Jordan Battle, they're both going to have to game. You can't have miscommunication from those two guys. But, I mean, he's got 196 yards as the second receiver in two games. He's getting 15 yards a catch. So I think that goes with, you let Kyron Williams or that's last name, Williams?
Yeah.
The running back. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, absolute brain cramp, like what his last name was. You let him be the one to beat you this week.
Yeah.
He's a decent running back, but and they cut, or they're going to end up trading Cam Akers, but
which is the weirdest situation of all time. I mean, trying to figure that out is just insanity.
Yeah, the dynamic there is kind of weird because they haven't run the ball well. Cam Akers was averaging like less than 2 yards a carry. Got a ton of carries in week one and only a few carries in week two. And even Williams, he's got got a decent amount of yards, but he's not getting a lot of yards per carry. So it's weird dynamic. Again, we'll see how, we'll see how things turn out. I don't think he's a stud running back. I think he's just another guy, but we'll see. So on to the next key.
Final point is confuse Stafford. Not going to be an easy thing to do, easier said than done. But confuse Stafford to where he's not super comfortable, and at times he's throwing the ball in locations that you want him to throw it. And the key to that is going to be there's going to be multiple assignments in the secondary, and they have to be able to grasp all of that and be super multiple. I just think it's very important that if they don't allow this passing game to get rolling against the young Bengals secondary, I thought the Bengals secondary got a freebie in week one against Cleveland because throwing the football was basically impossible. I thought last week against the Ravens, Lamar Jackson looked as good as I've ever seen him. And it seemed like 50-50 balls were being won by the Ravens. So I think this is a really big week for the Bengals secondary. And I think you can kind of see when you look at this list of Bengals defensive keys, everything is kind of help the secondary, rush the passer, makes it easier on the secondary. Don't let their number one guy, run free, help the secondary. Confusing Stafford, help the young secondary. Everything to me is keeping that Bengals youthful secondary feeling good about itself.
Yeah, and the Rams have a pretty young offensive core. Yeah, Stafford's he's old. He's been around forever. But Kyron Williams is a second-year player. Tutu Atwell is a third-year player. Pukunuku is a rookie. Offensive lineman, they've got a second-year player and a rookie. So, that's why I think it would be wise for them to do to run stunts, run twists, something to keep, especially running back, whoever they have in for blitz pickup. Their backup running backs are young guys. Ronnie Rivers is listed as their backup running back, and he's a second round player. So I keep them. You don't want them just to be able to line them just straight up and just expect what's on tape. I think just running exotic. I think this is the game. I don't want to say kitchen sink game, but this is an important game. Bengals need this win. You can't fall 0-3 and drop a very winnable game.
Yeah,
especially at home with everything going on Monday Night Football. I think this is a game to where you'll see some more exotic looks on offense and defense.
Yeah, and I think that's fair because it's just more possible. If you run all those exotic looks against Lamar Jackson, if he slips through the pocket all of a sudden, whoa, Nelly, I mean, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
So doing it against Matt Stafford, a little bit different. If something just opens and a canyon opens and he steps up, it's going to be a 10-yard game. Lamar would turn it into 70. So I do agree with you completely that if you want to get exotic, here is your chance.
Sure. Predictions. What do you have for the final score?
I'm going to take Bengals 21, Rams 17. I think it's going to be a little bit lower scoring, but I expect the Bengals to get on top early and utilize the run game a little bit more, utilize the passing game to be an extension of their run game in spots. And I hope and expect the defense to play well. Not playing a mobile quarterback, I think, is really going to help the Bengals defense.
It's funny because I'm at the exact same spot, Bengals 21, Bengals 17. I forgot to get your...
We did not.
I forgot to get Greg's to put on the slide here. So
I was going to say, we didn't even discuss. When I said 21-17, you looked at me like, what an idiot. You know, I was expecting you to come with a 35-31. That is the one thing we didn't discuss about today's show was our score predictions. So that's amazing. 21-17, right on the money. You're on mute, Joe.
See, that's what happens when you're coughing all the time. You put yourself on mute so you're not coughing into the microphone, and then you forget to unmute yourself.
Hey, don't tempt our fans with a good time. All of a sudden, they see you on mute talking. I mean, they're like, this might even be better. Don't give them any ideas, Joe.
What kind of an amateur operation are we running here, my lord? Anyway, I don't even know where I was going. So I don't think this is going to look like Bengals are a Super Bowl team type win, but I think it's just something to get them head in the right direction. Again, I expect the defense to play better. I think it's going to be a cleaner game on offense. They've only had one turnover in two games, no matter how, you know, despite how anemic everything has looked. So that's taking care of the ball is something that I think is going to continue. I think the defense is going to get at least a takeaway. So that's kind of where I'm feeling. And yeah, they're going to have this huge crowd. They're going to have a very large, loud, boisterous crowd. And I think they're going to feed off of it. So
yeah,
let's go. Let's feast. Any final words before we get out of here?
Let's get the Bengals first dub. And everybody will all be happy again. I need it. We all need it. I feel like, we came into such a high with kind of, I don't want to say unrealistic expectations, but I think at times you thought this might be easy for the Bengals. You know, we've gotten used to winning. So it's a nice little step back. And you got to remember, you know, times are still good and we're going to be in a good spot. So let's just go get a W and everything. Everything's going to be all right. We're okay. And then let's get the Reds in the playoffs.
Yeah, the Bengals thrive on being an underdog, and using that momentum and using that disrespect as a word, you know, to feed off of. So, yeah, last weekend was so weird because, again, Bengals crapped the bed. I would say they crapped the bed, but they lost the game that they could have, should have won. Bearcats absolutely crapped the bed. And the one team that kept the city's here, you know, the city's fan base afloat is the Reds.
Yeah.
They won two of three. I mean, yeah, that Sunday game was kind of a crapper, but they're winning two of three in most of these series, and they're a game out of, like, this is weird.
It is.
Like, this is 2023. I don't know what's going on in the world.
It is.
Again, yeah, Reds keep winning. They're up 2-0 right now. Obviously, this game will be over for about 10 hours by the time that this actually hits your podcast feed, so y'all know what happened by then. But outside of that, everyone have a good weekend. We will be back. Won't be doing a live post-game show because it's a Monday night game. Probably going to have a live show before the game, probably around 7:30 or so. So look forward to that. Hope you guys can join us. Again, if you're a patron, if you're part of our Slack community, be able to jump on live, ask questions, or just make an ass out of yourself like we do on a weekly basis.
Absolutely.
It's fun. Exactly. It's fun just to kind of look at yourself and, you know, you can be like, hey, I'm on the internet. I'm on YouTube.
So, well, and also, I mean, the Slack channel during the games is very, very happening. So that's always a fun place to be during the game as well.
Very positive. Never any overt cynicism or F-bombs being dropped by people like me. No overreactions, anything like that. So
it's a good spot. Come join us during the game. Slack is very enjoyable during the games.
So yeah, it's Twitter without all the extra crap, and you know, you get to talk with people that aren't a bunch of belligerent assholes.
Yeah.
At least, you know, outwardly belligerent assholes. So
yeah, I mean 50-50 it may be.
Right. It depends on the day. All right, everyone. Take care.